Everybody, welcome to Out the First. It is March the 14th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballinger. Thanks for being here. The Players' Championship is underway at TPC Sawgrass, and we got a heck of an opening round going on. It's about noontime when I'm recording this, so we're pretty well into the opening part of the first round with that first wave out there, substantially through the round. Rory McIlroy's playing great. Xander Schauffele's playing great. We've got Tommy Fleetwood playing well. Nick Taylor playing well. We've got a lot of players with good numbers on the board to start this round. And it looks like it's pretty soft out there. It's pretty gettable today. There are not many things to get in the players' way other than what the golf course presents. Nothing really weather-wise. The weather looks absolutely perfect. The wind's basically still over the course of the morning so far. Of course, that can always change. But right now, it looks like there's not a whole lot to hold up these guys. It's very scoreable right now. So the guys are making their moves, as I mentioned. And Ludvig Åberg is in there. Åberg is in there at 500 par as well, along with Nick Taylor and Tommy Fleetwood. The scoring is good. It is really, really good. And I know that when we think about this tournament, we typically think about good opening day scores. And we're going to get that today. There could be a threat of a 62 here. That would be 10 under par. It looks like McIlroy and Schauffele are getting close to running out of holes. Schauffele is on the sixth hole of the golf course as we're recording this. So he's got three full holes after this. He's 7 under in the round. McIlroy, same thing, playing back to front. He is a hole behind. So we'll see what happens. But they have one par 5 left, and the eighth is a par 3 that's, 240 yards, really tough shot. So we'll see what happens there to close it out. But good scoring to start the day. Ryan Fox made the 14th ace on the 17th hole in the history of the Players' Championship. There were three last year on 17, one so far this year. The pin today is a front middle pin. I mean, it is a funnel pin if there ever was one. Throw about 4 or 5 paces back behind the pin, just to the right, let it come back down the hill and right into the hole. And that's what Ryan Fox did. And that was his second consecutive eagle on the golf course. He eagled 16, hole in one, eagle on 17. And got him right back in a good position. He had made 2 bogeys before that, and then goes 2 eagles. What an incredible turnaround for Ryan Fox. So, good energy out there, good scoring. If you listen to our golf betting podcast, The Press, you heard a lot of the names that you're hearing right now, as mentioned, as good contenders for the week. And some of the other guys that we've talked about as well, Taylor Moore, Tom Hoagie, Jason Day, some names that we brought up, Ryan Moore even potentially is a name that we brought up at the start of the week, Justin Rose, they're playing well. Victor Hovland and Jordan Spieth are kind of struggling in different ways. It's interesting to kind of see what they've done so far. But there are some tough scores out there. I mean, for all the talk about being 7 under through 14 holes, you have guys like Vincent Norman, who's 5 over through 13. You have Justin Suh, 3 over through 9. Taylor Pendra, 3 over through 17. Adam Hadwin, 2 over through 10, not picking on Canadian guys. Keegan Bradley, 2 over through 10. So it's still going to, it can rise up and bite you. I mean, this is a tough golf course. It is tough to win on this golf course. And you're just one bad shot away from a disaster. McIlroy avoided one. He hit his tee shot on 18 into the water. He was 6 under par for the round at that point. It looked like anything could happen in terms of the ceiling in terms of a low score was pretty incredible at that point. Puts it in the water. And there was a long discussion between Jordan Spieth, Victor Hovland, and McIlroy about where the ball went in the water, because that determines the drop point. And if the drop point is pretty terrible, well, then you just hit another tee shot because you don't want to drop it in the rough with 400 yards to the green. You want to drop it somewhere where you have a chance to get up there. McIlroy fought for it. I think they came to an agreement, and he wound up being about 275 yards away, 280 yards away, where he dropped in the red stake hazard, dropped it in the fairway, put it on the green, didn't make the putt, right? He didn't make the putt for par, but he did 2 putt for a bogey and then went on from there. So he went out in 31 and then has been 2 under since as we're recording this. So some good golf overall. I do want to talk a little bit about some of the side conversations from yesterday and a little bit from Scottie Scheffler, I think, about what was said pre-tournament. Scheffler, I think, caused a lot of chatter, at least based on our Facebook page. And the talking point from him, and it wasn't a talking point, it's something he said earnestly. It's not like it was handed to him by the tour. But the thing that he said that really, I think, riled a lot of people up was that for fans who are upset about where golf is, which is this kind of broken, unresolved schism between two parties, that they should blame the guys who went to LIV Golf for that problem. They shouldn't look to the players on the PGA Tour. And I thought that was a very interesting choice. And it was a choice to say that. And he wanted to make it very evident to people that he does not feel like he should be blamed for the, you know, not he specifically, but players on the PGA Tour should specifically be blamed for what happened. The quote is, "If the fans are upset, then look at the guys that left. We had a tour. We were all together. And the people that left are no longer here," end quote. And he went on to kind of elaborate a little bit more. But he, and I think it is more complicated than he lays it out. Not in terms of morals or ethics. You know, the Saudis came in with a bag full of cash, and they decided that they were going to create their own tour and disrupt golf, and they were going to dangle irrationally high amounts of money at players, and those players took that money. Could those players have said no? Yeah, they could have. Would most of them, whether it was the Saudis or anybody else? Probably not. I don't. If the source of the money didn't bother them, then no one would have said no if it were quote-unquote good guys who were doing it. So I understand where he's coming from, because he's saying, hey, we're still here. We're still here on the original tour. We're still here on the original PGA Tour, trying to make this product better, trying to play the best golf that we can, trying to entertain people. And those guys went off and took the money, and they're playing in front of relatively few people in different places around the world, and no one's watching them on American TV, and they have relatively no audience, and almost no one cares. And because they've left, they've also driven a lot of people from watching our tour. They're the problem. We're still here doing the best that we can, and they left and caused a lot of problems for us. And kind of the insinuation behind that is they caused a lot of problems, and they want to be the solution to their own problem by buying their way into the PGA Tour. That's what Scheffler's insinuating. And I think he's got a point. He's right. That's effectively what the Saudis' entire strategy has been to spend the PGA Tour into submission. Now, everything that you've heard so far this week, especially from Jay Monahan, suggests that whatever deal could come, and that's a big if, but whatever deal could come, it's going to take a while. And not only is it going to take a while to negotiate, it's going to take a while to get approval from the Department of Justice. That could take 12 to 16 months to get approval. And then, you know, that's basically into 2026. That's when you could first have a season where everyone's kind of quote-unquote back together. But, again, what I don't know, and we've talked about this before on this show, but we haven't talked about it in a little while, and that is, what do the LIV golfers think about this? And I got it. What spurred me to say that is someone responding to me yesterday on X about, basically, Rory McIlroy says, you know, we've got to focus on the fan. We've got to think about the fan and try to consider their concerns. And that's who we need to focus on moving forward to get people re-engaged in the game. And that's great and everything. But how do you do that? There's no clear answer about that other than less commercials or slight changes to the telecast. Golf is what it is. And Max Homa put it that way. Golf is what it is. Now, there's not a whole lot that's going to change. There's not a whole lot that can change. If you have fewer players, I don't think that helps. Having 50, 70, 100 players, honestly, I think that's kind of stupid. You can have fewer exempt players, and I would argue for that all day. But having smaller fields is not an answer to your problem. In fact, I think it creates a bigger problem. Because people like underdog stories. People like the possibility of a random winner. They might not turn out in droves for it, but there are a lot of fans who care about that kind of thing. And count me among them, even though that might turn down the number of people who watch golf from week to week when there's a big old run of it. But having that possibility is a great thing. And besides, most people who casually watch golf don't know who the players are beyond like the top 30 or 40 players. They just don't. They're not invested in them. They don't care until they start winning and doing stuff. And that's totally fine. So whether they're there or they're not there doesn't mean anything. To have them there is a good thing. because that gives them the opportunity to establish themselves and for the tour to create new stars and build new people. That is a good thing to do. Now, McIlroy, for his part, talked yesterday, and I think he clarified a little bit better his comment from API about there being a more cutthroat PGA Tour. And he went into some more depth of, hey, I think we need to have a tour that forces you to prove yourself more often in a shorter term window than the way the PGA Tour works today. And to that end, I completely agree. I think a PGA Tour where you don't get a special exemption for making 300 starts or being on the top of the, in the top 20 or whatever, the all-time money list, those types of things, they need to go away. Those things are holding the future back. They're holding the best players from competing, the best players right now from competing back. And I agree to that end with McIlroy. So having a smaller number of fully exempt players could be a benefit, could be a thing moving forward. That could be a good outcome of this. If you went and said, hey, we want to give more opportunities to guys off PGA Tour U, more opportunities to guys who are playing well currently on the Korn Ferry Tour, DP World Tour, more players get into events that are playing well this season as opposed to over a lifetime or over multiple seasons, getting what amounts to a three-year exemption for a win, I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing. Maybe it's a one-and-a-half season exemption. I don't know. I don't know how that works. Maybe it's a one-season exemption for the win. I'm at least willing to explore those possibilities. One of the things you could start doing today, I think that would be better, is to change the alternate list setup. A lot of the alternate lists for tournaments are based on weird, arcane visions of what a good golfer is, and it prohibits some of the better golfers from getting into them. And there should be an alternate list for signature events, by the way. You should fill the field to at least 78 players. I would like to see 90, but whatever that number is, and you do it just straight down the points list. Here's where they are, or guys who played well in the points list the last week, last 3 weeks. What? Get them into these tournaments. Make it current. To that end, I agree with McIlroy. Wyndham Clark's vision for it, I think, is wrong, where he talked about wanting to have 100 exempt players. I think that's completely wrong. And that's it. I think what you need is something more like McIlroy's describing. I'm fine with that. But the idea of having 50 to 70 players is not it. That is not the right answer. Because those 50 to 75 players having to play against an additional 20 to 40 people is not a bad thing. That's a good thing. They're going to beat them most of the time. So let's try to figure out a way to kind of blend these two ideas. And I think you create a better representation of current form. Not as much bloat. Maybe you make tournaments a little bit faster, perhaps. I mean, there could be some potential benefits here. But I still think you need to have 120, 132 player fields week to week on the PGA Tour. It just needs to work that way. It needs to be better that way. Not 144, not 156. You have to spill over, especially in the early spring and winter months because the sun's not out as long, to a second day for the first round and sometimes a Saturday morning for the second round to make the cut, those types of things. I'm for that. But I think overall the idea of shrinking the tour is not the answer. The problem that people have that I've heard time and time again is that the best players are on two different tours. And Scottie Scheffler's right. The players who took the money chose to create that schism. They did. Now, could you argue that Jay Monahan was part of the problem for not taking the Saudis' call in the first place and being willing to listen to them? Yeah, I guess. But the Saudis could have had that conversation if Monahan picked up the phone and decided, you know what, we don't want to work with this guy. We're going to go our own way and we're going to stick it to him. And still have done the exact same thing. So I think it's a bit of a cop-out to say that to in public, is that's a reason. Well, Jay had just taken the call. If you just listened to Greg Norman. No, Greg Norman was hell-bent on screwing the PGA Tour. He's been hell-bent on screwing the PGA Tour for the better part of 35 years. So his agenda really had nothing to do with making good with Jay Monahan. That was never the point, okay? So let's leave that to there. I think Scheffler has the point largely right. The responsibility seems to have turned onto the PGA Tour at times of, you guys got to fix this. You got to make this better. When really, the people who created the problem are the ones who are now perceived as, in some ways, needing to be part of the solution. It's a very strange dynamic, I think, between the parties here and who thinks what and what needs to happen and how it needs to happen. But I think the clearest thing here is the feedback that I continue to see and hear and read is for golf to get back to where it needs to be, at least start a path toward amending with its audience. You need to have this resolved, whatever that is. And unfortunately, that may mean taking on the Saudi money. I don't know. Well, I guess you have to decide is how long are the Saudis willing to do this and continue losing money? The ratings for LIV are terrible. They continue to be terrible. They're not going to get better. They are what they are. So you can try to bleed them out and make them lose $10, $15, $20 billion, and they just go, well, forget this. We're out of here. There's also the possibility that players just kind of walk away. You know, some of them have contracts that are expiring after this year. A lot of them have 2-3 year deals. So some of those deals are going to expire. Some of those players are just going to be kicked to the curb. What are they going to do? What are they going to want to do? A number of them are toward the tail end of their careers, but what are they going to do? What would happen if there was a deal anyway? And this is the other thing that I've really thought about. What if there's a deal anyway and the Saudis say, all right, well, we're still going to do, this is all hypothetical. None of this is based on anything I've heard. Let's say we're going to have LIV Golf continue. We still have LIV Golf events. We still have 14 of them or 10 of them or whatever your number is. And then the LIV Golf players can play in PGA Tour events when they're not playing LIV Golf. Well, those LIV players could just say, all right, well, we're an independent contractor outside of the LIV agreement that we have, so we're not going to do that. We're just not going to play any extra. We'll play less. There you go. How about that? Because it's way, and someone asked me, the same person who inspired this conversation, asked me, why wouldn't LIV players want to play high-end PGA Tour events? And the answer is very simple. They're playing on a 54-person tour where 10 people matter. You only got to beat 9 other guys to win $4 million. I would much rather do that if I were a competitive golfer who just wanted the money and then wanted the chance to play in the majors, as opposed to having to go beat these fields on the PGA Tour where you have more players that are relevant. You have more players that could win. You have randoms that can win. You don't really get that on LIV. And still get a little bit less money. You get $3.6 million or $4 million for first place. So you're not always getting that same paycheck. I would much rather. And with the prize money distribution on LIV being what it is, you get so much more money for finishing in the top 10 than you do on the PGA Tour. So all you have to do is just be better than the crappy players that you're playing alongside, and you're still making insane amounts of money. That's the way it is distributed. Of course, if I were a LIV player, I'd go, yeah, I'd just keep on doing that if you let me. Why do I have to go play the PGA Tour events? They don't. And that's probably how it would work out. And so, you know, have someone like Webb Simpson go, well, we're really only talking about welcoming like 6 guys back to the PGA Tour. That's right. But what if only 1 or 2 of them really want to do it? Or they only want to do a couple of events, 1 or 2? Well, that's just as bad. You go, okay, well, you made this deal. And now you don't have any of the players back on the PGA Tour full time anyway. You still lost. And I think that's probably one of the big things that hang up in these negotiations among PGA Tour players of what to do to welcome LIV Golf players back if you're going to do that. Because what if they just don't, what if you welcome them back and they go, yeah, that thanks, but I'm not playing. I don't have any interest in that. Then it looks even worse. So there is a very realistic possibility that you have a tour where the end result is a unification agreement that really still keeps things kind of separate. And if the end result of the whole thing is LIV Golf goes away, okay, then you bring everyone back and it kind of works itself out. But if LIV insists on continuing to exist in some fashion as a parallel or whatever, I don't know that you get that either way, no matter what the outcome is. And that is discouraging, frightening, worrisome. You know, the outcome could still be effectively 2 separate tours. Or you could create a world where you have kind of the elite tour, 40, 50, 60 players, 70 players, whatever it is, and everyone else on the PGA Tour, and then you kind of combine the PGA Tour and the Korn Ferry Tour into one tour, and maybe you work it out that way, and you kind of tier the systems. I don't know. But the end result is still a super small tour then with, I think, less appeal. So I know McIlroy has been very, he's got his vision. He's got what he wants laid out. He wants smaller tour, more fluid tour. He wants an agreement with the Saudis and he wants it done soon. And yeah, I don't think what, either way, I still think there's an outcome that's bad. There's a very decent chance that there's a better outcome or an improvement from the current state, but I don't know that that's guaranteed. And I think everyone involved needs to think through that very, very carefully when considering what they're negotiating for and what they're negotiating against. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks so much for spending some time with me. I appreciate it. Hope you enjoy the Players' Championship first round today. Hope you get a chance to watch it if you're interested. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. We'll probably go over round one a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more about anything that's happening in the world of golf, but really the focus here is this week in Ponte Vedra Beach, so anything that's been said that's of interest, we'll talk about that. Get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballagy. I'm on Facebook and YouTube at Ryan Ballagy Golf. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.